Welcome to Innovation in Your Ears. This series follows the founders and businesses on the Level Up Accelerator program. I'm Charlie.
I'm Olu, and today you're going to hear from Anna at Explorage. You can hear all about her journey, her business, and what's next for them.
I'm Anna. I'm the CEO and founder of Explorage.com, and we are an online marketplace for self-storage. I should say the online marketplace for self-storage, actually.
Tell us, what does that actually mean?
So, from a customer perspective, if you were looking for self-storage, you could go on Explorage and find what you're looking for and book it there and then, basically. See what's available and book it there and then. So in the same way that you might have had a similar experience with booking.com to book a hotel room, similar thing with Explorage. For self-storage operators, they can list their space for free on Explorage, and they only pay us a commission when the customer successfully moves in. So it's risk-free
for them, really. They can just get involved.
Yeah, totally. It's a risk-free solution to customer acquisition, or even just a different angle to customer acquisition, because arguably Explorage is a platform that will attract a wider and more diverse demographic than they might have had otherwise. You know, take myself for example. If I was looking to book something, it would be probably Sunday night when my toddler's in bed and I've got a little bit of time and I've had a weekend of trying to sort stuff out and realising I need space and I just want to get it sorted there and then. So, yeah.
And is there nothing else out there? Like, where does this come from? What were people doing previously, or what are they doing right now?
So in the majority of cases, they'd just be finding individual storage operators near where they want to book and then having to contact them individually. So it might be email, it might be an online form, it might be ringing them up.
So that's all done one by one.
And one by one takes ages. Yeah, it takes ages. I mean, when we were doing this sort of exploration work for Explorage, we did like MVP and we properly sort of did that founder thing of doing everything manually. So like customers were asking us for self-storage in an area and we were doing that manual work of ringing all these storage operators up and trying to get back to them. And we had a guarantee as well that we would pay for the first month's storage if we didn't get back to them within 24 hours with some options.
So the pressure's on.
So the pressure was on. But literally every time we had like one inquiry, it would pretty much wipe out 3 or 4 hours just trying to get a sort of a breadth of choice for the customer, you know, trying to go to these different places, find out what they offered, how they operated, and then going back to the customer. So there is that. I mean, the other more direct comparison of online services, there are some other companies out there that are kind of like us, but they're kind of like, it's kind of like comparing the Yellow Pages to like booking.com or something. They're more like an online directory, basically.
Sure.
So you're not really having much more of a better experience. You're still completing a form and waiting for someone to come back to you.
Yeah, you're finding them, but you've still got to go through that process.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm really intrigued. So when you were doing that manual process, did the clients know that you were all scrambling behind the scenes manually?
Well, we never deliberately set out to hide that. And nobody ever asked the question. Yeah. It was just, I've got a problem, you are offering a solution, that's fine. And how that happened, they didn't really care, but obviously...
Which is really interesting in itself, right? It's validating the platform that you've built. That
yeah, definitely.
They don't actually, you know, the average Joe on the street, you or I, don't actually really care what's happening behind the scenes. We just want a couple of options.
That's
to be able to go.
I think the biggest thing was obviously the time it took, you know, 24 hours, and that's arguably was quite quick. You know, if you took to take what people are doing now, I mean, a lot of people are ringing around storage operators in their lunch break and things, and honestly, like, we've all got so many many better things to be doing, but also you know, life just seems to run at such a pace now. We're all juggling so many things, and just like every other industry, we just want to make this as quick and easy as possible for people.
Where's this idea or this journey started from? Was it something that you were trying to do yourself and you had a major problem with it, you were getting frustrated, or is it someone else, you've seen it?
Yeah, I think I it was kind of an observation of life and what was going on around me, really. So I left corporate in 2016 knowing that I wanted to build a business. And so every idea that I had, I'd scribble it down and then I'd do a like mini feasibility study of it, basically. So I suppose pulling in on my professional expertise over all the years.
What were you doing previously?
I was a chartered surveyor, surveyor, yeah. Jotting down every idea that I had. I mean, I was reading all of the business books and you know, so this was, I can't take full credit for this process. You know, they were saying, like, don't just run with your first idea. And then the idea for Explorage came up because I was just looking at, like, former colleagues that were living in the city centre over in Manchester, and they had plenty of disposable income and lots of, like, sports gear and stuff. They enjoyed coming to the mountains to go mountain biking or kite surfing or whatever at the weekends. Mm. And I just thought, well, you know, they're actually in the city centre. They're living maybe in, like, a third floor flat or something and trying to store this stuff. And I thought, well, maybe they could just store that a bit closer to where they were going to use it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then I started looking at, you know, how that could be facilitated. And naturally, I thought, well, you know, could they store it in like a peer-to-peer kind of way? But actually, as a business, the amount of funding that you'd need just to kind of generate that kind of a network and... I mean, look at Airbnb sort of thing. It's phenomenal, like, to try and build that kind of network. And there is a company that's already doing that, and they have sort of grown.
That's where you leave something in someone else's garage or attic, is it?
Yeah, okay. That sort of thing. So I really quickly realised that actually that wasn't something that I wanted to delve into.
And that's presumably when you focused in on
Yeah, well, what surprised me was actually how many independent storage operators there were around the place. So, like, on Anglesey, for example, there's 15, you know, of various types, but you would just never know that they were there. Yeah. Unless you'd specifically gone out to try and book something and then you'd contacted them individually or you'd driven past there or whatever. And, you know, they're not always the most visible places or certainly the most welcoming, you know, it's...
Yeah, they can be quite imposing or...
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're not... Yeah, sometimes it's sort of like a yard, isn't it? With you know, with fences and security around for obvious reasons.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess there's a job there for those guys to actually make it more welcoming, which presumably is where the platform comes in.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of self-storage operators. Actually, they're really, really great at making the customer feel welcomed and, you know... To be honest, I've not met a self-storage operator that isn't really friendly and welcoming. You know, they are, I don't know, it just seems to be a really friendly industry. But, yeah, I think, like, obviously the physical real estate part of it can be a little bit daunting, potentially, certainly to some customer demographics, more so than others. And I think as well, just as a population, as a cultural thing, and especially since COVID, you know, even doing the simplest thing that involves you having to drive somewhere and get out of your car or go and speak to somebody is a little bit like, oh, I won't bother. I'll ask next door if I can use their garage or I'll, you know, and yeah. You just sort of pivot
away. People have time to be searching and
no, yeah, yeah. And people don't, like, a lot of people don't seem to like sort of speaking to people either. I know that's a really bad generalisation, but I think... In this day and age, you've just got to be able to have that online presence and be able to serve the customer instantly as well.
Seconds.
And just give them that option if that's what they prefer. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, wow, okay. And so you talked about the fact you were exploring various ideas and you knew you wanted to move into business. I'm intrigued, what other ideas were there? How many did you go through before you came across this?
I've got a list of them somewhere. There must have been, like, maybe 20, 30 other ideas.
I think that's great.
And it was... I had to really discipline myself to just lock all the others away, in a box, and the box rattles, you know, and it's like, think about me, what about me? And yeah. you're just like, no, because, and I think any successful business owner will tell you, you've just got to focus. And yeah, so that was it.
Yeah,
really.
Well, we'll come back to that a little bit later on, but okay. I'm intrigued. What was life like growing up? Were you entrepreneurial as a kid? You know, were you that child that was, you know, the lemonade stand story, or were you more academic and good in school?
I never really enjoyed school per se. For me, school was kind of a means to an end. You had to go to school if you wanted to get on in life, I suppose. My family are, I hate saying the class systems, but I suppose working class, middle class sort of thing. I was the first one in my family to go to uni. I did well at school, but it wasn't because I loved it. It was because I knew I had to, really. And then I suppose from an entrepreneurial perspective, it was never on my radar that I was entrepreneurial, although with hindsight, it should have been bloody obvious to me, to be
right.
honest. But I guess you don't think about it like that when you're a kid, do you?
No, of course.
But I've always, and this is probably largely down to my mum, if there's a problem or if there's an opportunity or something, it's like, right, okay, what can we do about it? I suppose I'm an action-orientated person. So, for example, probably the most entrepreneurial thing I did do when I was little, so I was seven, and I was really cheesed off with the equipment that we had in our local village park, as you are.
What were they missing?
Actually, with hindsight, it was an ace park because it was very easy to kill yourself.
Right,
do you remember those like really extremely high slides,
yeah.
like the metal slides?
I remember those spinning things.
Yeah.
They were like,
yeah, spinning things, swings that would like catapult you like meters into the air. It was that kind of real old school 80s
yeah.
park.
But you weren't happy with it.
Well, no, because I'd been to other villages and seen that they were getting replaced with these really fancy, colourful, like wooden
kind of
equipment
yeah.
Type parks. And I was like, well, why can't we have that as well? So, yeah. And then I'm not sure if the council had sort of muted that they were going to take away the most dangerous of the equipment. But then there was no indication that it was going to be replaced. So, yeah, bizarrely, as a seven-year-old, I sort of had this sense that I could do something about it. and literally one day in the park, I rallied my friends to set up a stand by the bus stop, because obviously the bus stop was the busiest place in our village.
It was
a tiny village and not much going on. I mean, my whole primary school of infants and juniors, there was 48 kids.
Okay, really small, yeah.
So it was really small. But the bus stop was the hive of activity, naturally, and it was next to the park. So we got some, like, wooden bits of pallets and things and assembled this stand, and we just started putting bits on the stand to sell, to make some money to replace the park. And then I started badgering my mum, who was legendary for her Welsh cakes, as anybody in self-storage will know, that's spoken to us. I started badgering her to make Welsh cakes and scones, and fortunately it must have been a weekend when she wasn't working and she humoured us.
And how old are you at this point when you start outsourcing jobs to your mum, presumably who's earning nothing on the back of this?
Yeah, I think probably she did it just to keep me off her case to a degree. But seven. So we actually, it was amazing how well we did. And we ended up with all like the old pensioners from the village, like from the sort of pensioners' flats in the village. They were coming out in their droves because they'd heard about this. Like it just became this like little hub of activity on this random day in the village of Nerquis. And we raised £75, which back then
was pretty good going.
Quite good going, you know, for a group of like 7-year-olds to raise that from nothing on one day.
That's a lot of pick-a-mix.
Yeah, and it was a lot of pick-a-mix. It could have bought a lot of pick-a-mix. And it wasn't as if we'd sort of planned it and then did it the following week. It was just literally...
one off, that was it.
Like, now we thought about it in the morning, and by the end of the day we'd raised £75. And so we gave that to my mum, and she wrote a cheque then and sent it to the council with an accompanying letter, which we probably embellished as well. And yeah, it was funny because the press jumped on it. I don't even know how they heard about it, but basically we got a new park.
Wow.
So at the time, I thought the £75 had paid for most of that. but yeah, obviously it hadn't. But well, it just kind of prompted it.
That's an amazing story. I think it goes to show the power of telling a good story and inspiring others to get involved. And by taking action yourself, that others, whoever, whether that was... you know, your mum and dad secretly putting a few pounds in, or that's the council topping up, or whatever that is. I think, you know, it shows that by taking action and moving forward and showing you're willing to graft, actually others can rally behind that and really get involved.
I think that's it. I have no problem in sort of really fighting for something that I believe in. And so I think that was the thing. It was just like... Maybe it's kind of some sort of bizarre naivety, if you like. But I think sometimes, in a way, that's maybe a good thing. Because if you actually knew all of the challenges that lay ahead of you before you started down a road, would you ever actually go down it? You know, you...
Yeah, so sometimes you want to be unaware of what's going on, but capable and prepared to fight the hurdles as they appear.
I think that's it. And I think, and I suppose, as I've got older, I mean, certainly in my... in my 20s, I guess I had more of a crisis of identity then, in terms of I was afraid of failure and of and I had, you know, really low confidence and what people might think about me, right, and that sort of thing. And through various twists and turns in my 30s, then early 30s, it was almost like an epiphany of just like remembering who I really was, like up until that, you know, when you get sort of... you start dating and you kind of, you become a lot more self-conscious as sort of late teens. That from that point until my early 30s, I was kind of, I was still me, but I wasn't the truest sort of version of myself, if you like. Okay. And I suppose like when I came back to that in the 30s, I was like, oh yeah, you know, I'm...
I think it was clear suddenly. And,
yeah, it was really. And that definitely put a bit of fire in my belly again, so... good.
Well, awesome. And you know, and Explorage is doing really well at the moment. So you've recently closed a funding round, which is fantastic. I'm keen to hear a little bit from your perspective, especially as a female founder, and raising, obviously, Explorage is nationwide but based out of North Wales.
Yeah,
I'm intrigued to hear, like, what's your experience been in that funding round? You know, was it positive? Was it negative, challenging, any lessons learned there?
So it's a funny one, actually, because people quite often ask me what's it been like raising investment as a female founder. And it's probably the thing that I have, the subject that I have least to say on, because really, I don't know what it's like as anything else.
Yeah, fair point.
if you actually boil it down, I don't know what it's like to be a man raising investment, if you want to use that sort of example, or anybody else. I just know what it was like for me as a woman in North Wales raising investment. And for me, it felt incredibly hard.
Yeah.
You know, and I think anybody who's raised investment says it's hard. So again, I don't really know as a comparative how much harder it is in North Wales as a female founder compared to, you know, a young white guy in Silicon Valley, for example. You know, I don't know, but I can't help feeling like they don't have it easy either, because raising investment is hard. You're asking somebody to take a chance on you and to part with their hard-earned money. It's not easy to make money, you know, and you're asking someone whether they've sort of come into it by some sort of good fortune, whether they've earned it, whatever it is, it's still their money. And you're asking them to part with it and take a chance on you and your idea, really, and your business. And you're committing to sort of successfully executing on doing something with that. And rightly so, I suppose they want to
scrutinise and they want to be sure, right?
Yeah. And but you know, for all the challenges that we did encounter in doing that, and I don't think they were challenges that are necessarily uncommon to any other founder, really. You know, the pushbacks, the questioning, the probing, the timing's not right, or it's not for me, or I don't really know enough about it. All these different things. Every single time, as much as you don't want to hear that, every single time, it just helped us to sharpen our focus and sharpen our approach.
You're using it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when we did then close the round and we set about starting the business, a lot of that thinking and preparing and planning had already been done because we'd been scrutinised so much.
Put you in a really good place then, once it's all done and settled, actually. I absolutely love that answer and I think that approach is maybe with imbalance is really healthy. Of, I don't know what it's like for somebody else, so I'm not actually going to waste too much time or mental energy worrying or thinking about it, and just cracking on. And I think that's something that, you know, obviously I've done some work with you, and we see week by week, is that the ability for a founder to understand when they need to just move quickly with something versus when it needs much more thought and need to move slowly.
Yeah.
Difficult balance and act. And how are you finding that sort of decision-making process?
Slightly bizarre, I must admit. Yeah, it is.
Are you finding you want to move quicker or you want to move slower with things? And
Arlo, it's me. I always want to move quick. You know, anytime we talk about anything, you're like, why do you look concerned? I'm like, because I wanted to have done this 3 months ago. And you're like, you literally like, that's because you're a founder and you are sort of how you are. But yeah, I am, knowing myself and how I approach things, I am very mindful to pause and reflect on certain things and just go, right, okay, that needs a bit of a break or a pause or a reflect, and then another part, it's like go. Yeah. and so that I say it's bizarre. It's just it's such a delicate balance, really.
And I guess more so as the team grows, because it's previously been other people around and involved, but it's been much more just you.
Yeah.
Where I guess you can just go all hours at whatever speed you want. Whereas now, actually, I guess you're building that team out. You're building a bit more structure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I learned a lot when I was a surveyor, particularly when I was working for myself, when I was bootstrapping my time doing surveying whilst I was exploring another business, well, Explorage. I was doing some project management stuff. So this was like £35 million new build scheme. And I was chairing board meetings for that project. Mm. And it was interesting because I knew every component that contributed to the discussions that were being had around the table. So it's almost like seeing the cards that everybody was holding. And yet I also got to see what cards were disclosed at what point.
Yeah.
And so I saw this game in play, in effect, of people using, only giving away certain amounts of information or doing certain things in order to get a particular outcome. And so I learned a lot about timing from that. And also sort of, I think in any kind of industry or sector, there is an element of like politics to it. I hate to say it, and I don't particularly like politics. I mean, I studied it at A level, but never particularly enjoyed it. I certainly don't enjoy, you know, government politics. but it is surprising how I think you see that in any sector. You know, that I did an Eye on Leadership course, and they taught me a really interesting thing about these like different windows. And it's like, whenever you're engaging with a person, there's things that they'll share with you, there's things that you'll come to know, There's things that are actually like in their blind spot that even they don't know. And then there's another bit which is like this window of opportunity. And as a great leader, you want to be kind of constantly exploring this window of opportunity, like their potential in a way. And I mean, that's something that's always excited me.
So it gives a bit of a snapshot. What does the next year or two look like in terms of the Explorage team? How has that grown? What's the kind of culture that you're building?
I feel like I can't really talk about this without getting up and doing a little dance. I get so excited about
it. Get up and do a little dance.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's crazy because, I mean, we've definitely got the wind in our sails now. And so our marketplace consists of B2B customers and B2C customers. So for listeners who are not familiar with those terms, so business to business, which is connecting with storage operators and building up that side of the network. And then B2C is obviously the consumers and people actually booking self-storage. And yeah, we've definitely got our wind in our sails. The B2B side, so building up this network of storage operators, naturally has to come first. And yeah, just the response that we're getting from storage operators is just fantastic. And one part of the job that I'm particularly loving at the moment is hearing firsthand like where their pain points are. So not even necessarily anything to do with Explorage, but other things, largely related to tech, you know, and hearing that and then how that actually fits into their business and how they operate and they're growing. And then as a founder, you're naturally then sort of innovating. You're constantly innovating.
Yeah, because you're actually going really deep into the customer problem and other problems that they've got and trying to understand how can we really help you as a...
Absolutely.
As a group of people and businesses.
Definitely, because they always say, as a founder, you're always inspired by the opportunity and different things, but actually you've got to fall in love with the customer problem, and we're still finding out what those problems are from both sides of our marketplace. So yeah, the big milestone will be getting to product market fit. That's what I should have said to you in answer to the question as a quick response. The big milestone will be getting to product market fit. And that's not a finite, oh, we've achieved it and that's it, we're done. It is a constant iterative process, but certainly achieving a sense of product market fit. Customers love you, they're recommending you to their friends. That's going to be massive for us, and that's 100% just focusing on that. And then as far as the team goes, I mean, I've learned a huge amount already in terms of what I look for in a team, and also what skills are required in the team. So we're currently recruiting. We've got a couple of positions to fill now. And yeah, it's just continuing to evolve. So I fully expect that we might end up with a couple more people by the end of the year. But
that's really exciting.
Yeah.
Tell me then, if money was no object and there were no barriers at all, and you could have anybody in the world, who would you pick to have in the team?
Oh my word! What a question. I can't think of a particular name, but I suppose. Yeah, obviously somebody who's built out a marketplace like us would be epic. But then, you know, HB's business is so unique. I know this is going to sound really cheesy, but I love the team that we've got. So, and then we work with, you know, other independent companies and people as well who sort of are an extension of the team, and they're fantastic too. And I think... in our own way, we're just learning so much specifically about the industry that we're working in and the customer base. And that's not something that you could just take from another business and plonk it in and say, right, you build it. Because you can't just duplicate what they've done elsewhere. So sorry, I haven't got a short answer.
I noticed you got a top on that says choose love, and there's definitely a lot of love for your team. Today,
every time I think about them, I smile. They're just, they're just so great, and like they just really got on board with what it is that we're setting out to achieve, and yeah, they've embraced it. They love a challenge, which is good.
Yeah, that's really exciting, I think, for plans for the year ahead. You said that you were reading all the books and sort of consuming all sorts of information.
Yeah.
Give a recommendation for a book, a podcast, a movie even, for anyone who's looking at starting a business or in those early stages of setting a business up. What's been the most impactful or highly recommended resource you'd share with them?
I mean, there's a great book called Inspired, which is about product development, product management, which actually touches on more than just the product as well. But that's been my latest read, and I definitely recommend that. There's all sorts. I've read Good to Great, The One Thing, The Lean Startup, E-Myth, Shoe Dog. I suppose it depends what you go for. If you're somebody who likes to read autobiographies and things, I'm not so much into that. I quite like the textbook. I suppose it goes back to like how I approach school in a way.
Yeah,
like,
quite pragmatic.
Quite pragmatic, yeah. Then I do like the odd inspirational story, but then I tend to listen to those more on like YouTube and things. So, when I left corporate, the things that were inspiring but less sort of business-led, there was a little book called The Alchemist, which I love. I just read that over and over again. It's actually fictional.
A couple of quick fire questions before we wrap up. Again, thinking about others who are embarking on this journey or are already on that journey.
Yeah.
You've obviously been very, very good at balancing things, or you've managed to balance things. So, you know, you were looking at various business ideas whilst also working, and then you were working for yourself whilst doing it. You've had a child. I know got a family spud farm. how are you?
Anglesey Potato Company. There's a plug.
there's the shout out. What tip would you give anybody who's got a lot on, is maybe feeling overwhelmed as to how best to balance that, or how to stay sane?
Yeah, I think I try and discipline myself to have a little routine each day, because, to be perfectly honest, I have like zero time for myself when I'm not working or looking after Edwin, my little boy. So I do try and discipline myself to get up half an hour earlier than he might do usually.
Okay. Gonna hit us. What's the morning routine?
I just do 10 minutes of either Pilates or yoga. There's a lady called Boho Beautiful on YouTube, and I just love it because she films these classes from all over the world. So it's not just watching someone in a studio. Yeah. You actually feel like you've been somewhere before. Nice. You've had your breakfast kind of thing. I do 10 minutes of that, and then I do about 10 minutes of meditation. And that's something, again, since realising I was going to leave corporate, I've disciplined myself to try and do some exercise and a little bit of meditation each morning. Sometimes I fall off the wagon, and that can go on for a couple of months, but I definitely notice it and I feel a huge amount better when I get back on.
Yeah, okay.
And I do try and do that thing of not allowing myself to beat myself up when I haven't done it.
It happens.
And then think to myself, oh, well, I'll start it next month or I'll start it on Monday. Don't wait until then. Just if you wake up and you feel like doing it now, do it now. And there's that thing, isn't there, about it takes a certain amount of repetitions for something to become a habit. So it definitely does get easier. And in the meantime, you've just got to discipline yourself to do it. But
okay, so morning routine, that's the key to staying sane.
That's the key for me to stay sane. And I don't know. I think I've built up a lot of resilience doing what I did with the surveying and the project management. You know, I saw a lot in that industry. You know, that's high pressure stuff, risky stuff. I think I built up a lot of resilience with that. But I guess I'm not somebody to just expect something to happen overnight and give up if it doesn't. You know, I find it so hard to...
All the more reason, right, to pick a business or pursue a business idea that you really believe in, you're passionate about, because during those tough times, I think couple of other guys have talked about that, that to have that resilience and determination to keep going, even when you're exhausted or there's a lot of other stuff going on, you've got to fundamentally be passionate about solving that problem for that group of people.
Yeah, definitely. And there was definitely time, certainly before raising the investment, because at that point you don't know if you're going to get the investment. So you don't know if it's ever going to become a fully fledged business, really. There were times when I'd ask myself, right, you know, is this the point where I stop? And I could just never, I just couldn't kind of live with myself. I was like, no, I can't see
you stopping.
I won't.
Yeah.
I won't stop. And I don't. It's just not in my nature. Yeah. Just keep going and finding a way through things.
Okay. Last two questions. First one, what's the one question you wish that I'd asked?
Did I want a cup of tea when I came in?
What would you have said?
Yes, please, Ollie.
Do you know what? Someone else said the same thing, and I haven't learned. I saw you. You've got a coffee. You went and got a coffee.
Because I came in, I was like, he's not sorted out tea. I'm going to go and get one.
Oh man, that's the second time I'm not learning. Okay.
I suppose. Yeah. What do I wish someone had told me or taught me?
And what would you have said as an answer to that?
I think literally the nuts and bolts of investment raising.
Yeah.
When I first embarked on it, I was really quite naive to the level of scrutiny that you do go into. And I think having somebody even show me, I mean, the information exists out there, but when you're at that point, you don't know what you don't know, so you don't know what to ask for.
You kind of don't know how to even look at it, what to take from it. Yeah.
You know, if someone said to me, right, so an investor is going to be looking for these things, X, Y, Z, and they're going to have a checklist, which is pretty much like their due diligence folders are effectively a checklist of documents and bits and pieces. So it can, the whole process is quite structured. You know, obviously different companies ask for slightly different things, but on the whole, that's what they're driving at. And if you, before you speak to any investor, if you looked at that and thought, right, okay, so I'm a little bit behind on that, I'm ahead on that, I'm a bit behind on that. They don't just want a business plan. Because even if you do give them the business plan and they're interested, they're then instantly going to come back and ask for this other stuff. So if you, in the formation of your business, can even be just thinking around that kind of thing, then it's going to help you to focus your attention and your time, which is limited for most people, especially when you're trying to bootstrap a startup, towards achieving those things. And it is frustrating because different investors will tell you different reasons why it might not be for them right now. And so you're constantly like, oh God, I've got to add that bit to it. But actually, I think a lot of the fundamentals are quite similar.
Quite consistent, yeah.
Yeah. And it's important when they do come back and say that sort of thing that you don't take it personally, because they might be telling you utter truth, you know, but also they might just be sort of saying that because actually, more importantly, the timing's not right for them right now. Or doesn't fit their portfolio. Yeah. And I've got no idea what that means. You know, like, well, I didn't. I do now. But, yeah, again, it's just that sort of thing, really. Yeah, that level of insight from an investor standpoint.
Okay. And that leads nicely on to the last question then, which is, so I guess for almost anything, whether it's to ask questions about your experience in fundraising, to ask about that kind of process and what to expect, whether it's to ask a bit more about some of the books that you recommended.
Masters of Scale podcast, I should have said on
Masters
well.
Of Scale
That's
podcast.
That's quite a good one, yeah.
So for anyone who wants to get in touch, to reach out, to pick your brains or anything like that, as Anna, as well as anyone who wants to learn more about the business, whether they're looking for storage, whether they're a potential operator.
Yes, explorage.com.
What's the best way to get in touch?
So if you're looking for storage or you want to list your storage facility, you can go directly to explorage.com, where you can do that instantly. Also, we've got a very friendly team who'd be more than happy to help. And obviously, my door's always open as well. So feel free to contact me. I'm on Anna Roberts at explorage.com. or ring the office number and I'll get back to you.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Dioch yn fawr iawn.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Remember to follow us on all our social media and the businesses featured in this episode.